The Water, a Cobra Kai fan fiction by Story Shark 2005, read by GorillasGal86. Rating: Mature. Summary: Pitchers and catchers, quarterbacks and receivers, tops and bottoms. Johnny contemplates things the other way around. My face was numb, my lungs were sore, but I swam until my feet could touch the shore. Now I've been sleeping on your porch, I'm still too scared to bust the lock on your door. So I crawled out of the back door, took off all these tight clothes, jumped into the water. So I crawled out of the back door, took off all these tight clothes, jumped into the water. I jumped into the water. The water. The water. Rah, rah, riot. Water. What offended me the most about the whole to-do was not the charge of being homosexual. It was the general insinuation that if I were gay, I wouldn't want everyone knowing about it. If I was gay, I'd be gay all the way. Mike Piazza, long shot. One of the perks of sleeping with a guy, Johnny had found, was that getting a guy in the mood wasn't all that complicated. Well, okay, it wasn't exactly a peer-reviewed scientific study, but Johnny knows he's a typical guy who will jump at any and all opportunities. And the only guy he'd ever fucked had been LaRusso, of course. And so far, getting LaRusso in the sack was mostly just giving him a look, or kissing him, or shoving him down the hallway onto the bed. He was getting laid more regularly than at any other point in his life, even in his 20s before his mother had died and turned him into a sad person. Johnny, at age 25, could basically walk into a bar, lock eyes with any female in the room he liked, and expecting the annoyance of pleasantries, introducing himself, buying a drink, stupid brain-numbing small talk, reel her in like a fish. He would guess that at his peak, Johnny was batting close to 1,000 at most bars in the valley. Shannon had been a firecracker for a year or so, until she realized he wasn't exactly a meal ticket, and that avenue dried up pretty quick. But thinking back through the strings of girlfriends before and after Shannon, he'd never had the luxury of coming home to the same person every night, still finding them attractive, and having the option of a good lay whenever he pleased. Did he miss dating a girl, feeling like a normal person? Yes. Did he miss fucking a girl? Not really. Not at this rate, anyway. But early into 2019, there are a few instances where Daniel gets home from the dealership, tired with small bruises appearing like thumbprints of purple finger paint under his eyes. Johnny tries not to be a total dick about it, and rubs a hand down LaRusso's back, and reheats something left over for dinner. He's looking forward to a little good old-fashioned sexual healing at bedtime, but the moment just doesn't seem to come. Johnny's propped up on one elbow, nodding stupidly as LaRusso blabbers on about how stressed out he is, and how weird work is now that Amanda and her sugar baby Anoush are taking over something. LaRusso is lying there in his white t-shirt and boxer briefs, and he's jabbering on, groaning, rubbing his hands down his face. It's just so weird, because I built that place. I mean, Johnny, I had plans for it even before I met Amanda. I mean, ever since I started working for Jerry, that was the idea, you know, start my own thing, be my own boss. But now I call up any of the other branches and ask to get something done, and they feel like they have to run it by Anoush. Like, what the fuck is that about? Whose name is on the goddamn building? I was Anoush's boss for 18 years, and now, just because I give up a little executive responsibility, they think I'm a junior salesman. LaRusso stops talking and looks over at Johnny, and Johnny gathers he's supposed to offer advice or something. You wanna, like, fuck around a little? Daniel's face wrinkles up, and Johnny gathers he's said the wrong thing. You didn't hear a word I said, did you? You're all stressed out. How about a hand job? Johnny nods reasonably and reaches out. Daniel slaps his hand away and vaults up, still grumbling about only one thing you want from me, into the bathroom. And the shower slams on. Johnny sits up in bed, thinking that maybe dating a chick and a dude weren't so different after all. He puts up with a 2-week drought before he decides something has to be done. You see, they have a system, a routine so to speak, an unspoken arrangement. LaRusso is the one who gets fucked, and Johnny does the fucking. They'd fallen right into that, immediately. It was so natural. Daniel had practically hauled Johnny on top of him. And that first early morning at Johnny's, Daniel had kissed the words into his lips. Would you fuck me? Maybe the single hottest moment Johnny can recall in his life. Daniel's slick, dark chest heaving, and his eyes darting around a little nervous. And ever since then, it's just been the way things are. What else? Daniel likes a little dirty talk. Johnny's still not one for pet names. Shudder. But he does try to vary up the LaRussos with a Daniel once in a while. Well, it was only polite, especially when you were balls deep in somebody, to use their given name. Also, he's thrown in a baby here and there, which he knows Daniel loves, but it's still something he has to practice doing without making a weird face. He starts easy enough. It really was pretty natural when his blood was on fire, rocking into Daniel on the edge of orgasm to say, "Fuck yeah, baby, oh my god." You know, slip it in there right before he comes like it was mindless. Like maybe he wasn't responsible for the shit that came out of his mouth at a time like that. But anyway, Daniel's version of dirty talk was more like egging Johnny on. Like, "Come on, Johnny. What are you gonna do about it, Johnny? You gonna fuck my brains out, huh?" With his Jersey accent and the insubordinate tilt to his chin. And Jesus Christ, it made Johnny crazy. Made him want to hit him sometimes. And he thinks sometimes, reading into the glint in Daniel's dark eyes, that maybe Daniel would let him. So anyway, all clues point to them doing it the right way around. Johnny's the big manly man and Daniel's the fuckboy. Don't tell him he said that. But once in a while, there are clues to the contrary. During another night of LaRusso's tedious diatribes on how shitty it was to, you know, sell the majority shares of your business to your ex-wife after you've cheated on her, Johnny picks out a couple of phrases to mull over. "Those guys used to come to me for things. I was the boss. I'm sick of being treated like I still don't call the shots around there. Whose name is on the building, Johnny? Is it Noruziato? No, no, it's not. Can you believe?" And blah, blah, blah. "So you want to be the boss?" Johnny interrupts the tirade late on a Thursday night. Daniel stops pacing, his tie slung down low, his slate-blue dress shirt unbuttoned halfway down his chest. He's standing there, looking at Johnny with soft eyes, having just slid his belt from his pressed khakis. He looks hot. Johnny watches him, trying to look hot by being shirtless in bed. "I don't know," he sighs. "I don't, not really. I just want to be done with this so I can teach." He sits down on the edge of the bed, looking a little dejected. It's frustrating to be there and not be in charge. I miss feeling like I'm steering the ship." He shakes his head, presses his fingers into his eye sockets. "It's fine. It's just weird. I knew it would be weird." "You could be the boss here." The words slip from Johnny's mouth before he even thinks them through, but the idea has been stewing for a while. In bed. Daniel looks over his shoulder at him incredulous, eyebrows and forehead wrinkled up. "What do you mean, like?" Daniel waits, like it's a joke. Johnny quirks his eyebrows up once, covering up his nerves. "You know," Johnny clears his throat. If you wanted to try it the other way around, it might make you feel better. It might be hot. Daniel's jaw drops a little, and there's a terrible silence for a couple of long seconds before Daniel starts laughing and stands to pull his shirt off. "What's so funny?" Johnny frowns. "Yeah, right," he grins, laughing at the ceiling as he hangs his tie on his stupid tie rack in the closet. "I'd pay to see that, Johnny Lawrence, on the..." "It's hilarious, Johnny." "What? You don't think I could do it?" Daniel turns mid-laugh, his eyes bright, fingers on his shirt buttons. Johnny sits up straighter in the bed and watches Daniel's eyes drop down, rake over his chest and abs. He pulls himself out of it after a moment and rolls his eyes, walking into the bathroom. "Well, it's not exactly Cobra Kai philosophy, is it?" Daniel calls, running his toothbrush under the faucet. "Wait for somebody else to strike first? Trust they're going to take care of you? Let them in and hope you don't get hurt?" Johnny gets out of bed and comes over to lean on the bathroom doorway, watches Daniel brush his teeth, spit into the sink. He rinses his brush, giving Johnny a funny look. "What? I'm not Cobra Kai anymore." Johnny shakes his head. Daniel's expression melts predictably, and he steps into Johnny's space, kisses him slow and hot. "I know." He breathes, fingertips of one hand hovering over Johnny's cheek, making his skin tingle. They go to bed, and Daniel pulls him over on top like always. And Johnny follows, and breathes hot and heavy into his neck while he jacks him off. Daniel kisses him right before he comes, and Johnny takes it all in. The feel of his hips under his fingertips, the taste of his tongue, the wet heat between their stomachs. "You don't have to do anything different. I like us," Daniel mumbles into his lips. Johnny pushes his hair back, a little sweaty, studies the shape of his cheeks and jaw, and the bruised hidden places on his collarbone and chest. "I know, just whatever you want." He shakes his head. Maybe it's the most honest he's been with anybody ever, in a very long time. "Don't be afraid to tell me what you want." "You," Daniel says, but he's not looking Johnny in the eye. "Just you." Johnny concludes two things. One, if he's gonna get fucked, he has to be either high or drunk. All the Googling he's done seems to indicate that getting fucked in the ass was no goddamn joke. Lots of things can go wrong, too. He quickly slams the laptop shut and breathes into his hands. Anyways, relaxation seems to be sort of the key. Two, to get Daniel to fuck him, he's gonna have to piss him off first. He starts to formulate a plan. Johnny likes the control part. He really does, like physically. He likes calling the shots and pushing LaRusso around and telling him how it's going to be, crowding him into corners and leaving bruises on the fronts of his shoulders and teeth marks on his chest. But he also likes it when LaRusso pushes back, when Daniel's jaw gets tight and his fists clench white and his breathing picks up. There's a raw thrill there, thinking about what would happen if he pushed too far. Johnny's always been reckless, ever since he could remember. Caution was for kids with a real future, with something to preserve. It wasn't the same for a kid with no father and a mother who cared more about living safe and comfortable than about being happy. He knew what putting safety ahead of self meant. So for 50 years he lived for himself, and only himself, with no real regard for self-preservation, longevity, no plan. He squandered his chance at fatherhood and a relationship with the mother of his son. He didn't have much to preserve until he got his kid back and LaRusso at his side. He's 50 years old with something to finally live for, something to protect. And he doesn't know what to do with that some days. Anyway, He thinks all of this has something to do with the sex. He catches a Dodgers game with Jimmy a week later. Day game on a Sunday. LaRusso was taking Sam around to college campus visits or something. Robbie was staying home panicking, probably. The Dodgers were getting pounded by the Giants, top of the third inning, and Johnny's thinking overpriced beer might be worth it, the way this game was looking. Jimmy sitting next to him, tossing candied pecans into his mouth, crunching loudly. "I hate getting fucked by this guy." Johnny shakes his head, pointing down at the pitcher's mound, where Madison Bumgarner was doing his level best to make the Dodgers look like a bunch of little leaguers. It didn't help that Ryu was up to bat. "Look at this dopey fuck," Johnny points. "You know there isn't a pitcher in the league who doesn't look like a goddamn retard with a bat in his hand. What's this guy's batting average?" Ryu takes a choppy swing, 0-2. Jimmy cranes forward, studying the Jumbotron, and winces. 157. "Jesus, that's embarrassing." Jimmy shrugs. "Well, like you said, it all kind of comes out even if every pitcher in the league sucks at hitting." "Yeah," Johnny sighs, thinking of his last time he'd gotten to bring Daniel to a game, to drink beer and kick their feet together and argue over the designated hitter rule. It had been months ago. Ryu strikes out swinging and slumps back to the dugout looking relieved. The inning is over, and Johnny watches Buster Posey meet Bumgarner at the mound, give him a slap on the ass, and Bumgarner pulls his catcher into an affectionate noogie. "Now see, that's the real anchor of a team, you know?" Jimmy gestures to Posey horsing around with Bumgarner, walking back to their own dugout. The pitcher gets all the credit, but it's the catcher who's laying down the signs and calling the game. You can't have a decent battery without a great catcher. "Yeah, but the pitcher takes the win or the loss." Johnny stretches his legs out, watching the palm trees sway from over the left field wall. The pressure's all on him. "Yeah, but you can't win without throwing the right stuff. When all that pressure gets to his head, he's got to rely on the catcher to think for him." Jimmy shakes his head, and they watch Ryu take the mound, throw a couple practice pitches at Russell Martin. "It's the catcher, man. He's like the quarterback, without all the glory." Johnny thinks about this all the way to the vendors and buys a couple tall boys of Miller and two slices of pizza. "The catcher's like the quarterback," he mutters to himself, carrying the cold cans and cardboard plate of greasy pizza. He's walking back down the stadium stairs and has to stop when he hears the crack of a bat and about 80% of the crowd groan and sigh. Madison Bumgarner, pitcher for the San Francisco Giants, with a batting average just squeaking past Ryu's abysmal number, hits a 2-run homer into the left field stands. "See? Whose fault is that?" Johnny says to Jimmy when he gets back to his seat, still watching Bumgarner's big dumb face as he chugs around the bases. Ryu pulls his cap low over his nose, looking like he wants to die. Jimmy laughs, reaching jovially for the beer and pizza. "Sometimes you get lucky, I guess." "Luck is for pussies. Ryu threw him a meatball." Johnny cracks the beer open, shaking his head. Jimmy bites into his pizza. "Hey, speaking of getting lucky, how's it going with LaRusso?" "It's fine," Johnny nods. "Fine." Jimmy's eyebrows go up. "Good, it's good." "Oh yeah? I don't know, Jimmy. I'm getting laid, man, it's good. Jesus. I mean, how much do you really want to know?" "All right, fine." Jimmy puts his hands up. "I was just asking." "Well, it's good." "Good." Jimmy seems to leave it alone for a minute, chewing on his pizza and wiping grease off his fingers with a stack of napkins on his lap. But Johnny can tell he's just sitting there, thinking how to word his next objection to Johnny, probably fucking up the only good things in his life. Ryu manages to strike Joe Panic out. Hopeful applause fills the stadium. "Johnny, you know, to be completely honest, Bobby and I always worry about you. You have this tendency to push people away when it's getting serious. And it seems like this is the first one with potential in a long time. I mean, with Shannon, we had kind of hoped. Don't. Man, not with Shannon. You're gonna give me nightmares. Johnny shudders, biting into his own slice of pepperoni. Fine, but it's a big jump for you. Going from your usual thing to a serious relationship? I mean, Daniel divorced his wife for this. You don't think I know that? Johnny sighs, setting the pizza down and opting for his beer. Yeah, but you need to remember it. Don't forget it when times start to get rough. That's what it's all about, Johnny. Commitment is seeing through the bad stuff. Jesus, you do know I'm not married to this guy, right? Yeah, but you're not 25 years old anymore. And when it comes along at your age, all I'm saying is you gotta take it seriously. I'm taking it seriously. Okay, good. Good. Johnny grabs a bag of pecans from Jimmy's fingers and throws a handful in his mouth, crunching loudly. Jimmy rolls his eyes, but there's a fondness there that never goes away. The ever-constant warmth and affability that makes Jimmy, Jimmy. Good old Jimmy. Johnny waits until Jimmy takes the bag of pecans back, tosses a few into his mouth, and tips a can of beer back to wash them down. Johnny side-eyes him, waiting for the perfect moment. I'm thinking about letting him fuck me in the ass. Jimmy spits his beer out all over the thankfully empty seats in front of him, catching little bits of chewed up pecans in his hand, and Johnny's fairly sure some of the beer came back up through his nose. Johnny laughs out loud, slapping Jimmy on the back, who is doubled over, half coughing, half laughing, right along with Johnny. Oh my God! He chokes, holding his beer-soaked hand out helplessly and squeezing his eyes shut in mirth. Never say that sentence again. Oh, I think I'm scarred for life. Hey man, you asked. Johnny leans back in his seat, corking his eyebrows, and picks his pizza back up. I'm taking this shit seriously. The summer of 1985, the summer after high school, Jimmy rounds the gang up, and they pile into Dutch's latest ride, an 81 blue Bronco he had hauled out of the dump. Jimmy had an uncle in Lake Tahoe, and they drove 8 hours overnight, and instead of going straight to the house and getting some sleep, Dutch turned the radio up and led them down a rough gravel road to Angora Lakes. They hiked another mile to a stomach-dropping 60-foot precipice over slate-blue water, dimly lit by the coming sunrise. Dutch had his shoes off mid-run, shirt tossed to the wind before Johnny watched him leap into the void, twisting and falling. Dutch screamed, but it wasn't fear. It was joy, and verve, and youth, and freedom. Jimmy and Bobby hanging back, you guys are crazy. And Johnny towed off his shoes and socks, and felt the rough granite under his feet, inhaled the smell of pine trees in his nose. He feels Tommy's hand on his shoulder, turns to see his crooked front teeth, and his freckled smile, and his tawny eyes. Come on, Johnny, let's go. His fingers tighten on the granite wall, and he peers down, 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 and it seems about a mile high. He remembers the echo of the feeling of his chest closing in. He was scared. It was fear, paralyzing and simple. The fuck are you talking about? Did you just say you're a quarterback? LaRusso pushes Johnny back, detaching Johnny's lips from his chest where he'd been mumbling nonsense, or sports metaphors, apparently. What? Johnny breathes, trying to rewind his brain back a little. What the fuck had he been saying? You just said, fuck yeah, baby, I'm the quarterback. Let's do this. Well, I didn't have to say it like that in the most matter-of-fact, least sexy way possible. Oh, I did. Johnny shakes his head, still a little fuzzy. Oh, whatever. Let's fuck. You're killing my boner. Johnny leans in for a kiss. Johnny expects to get pushed back, but he doesn't. He gets a slow, hot kiss for the next couple minutes, ratcheting up the gut-twisting arousal until he can't think straight once again. Except for one niggling thought. Johnny pulls back a little. Daniel's eyes are closed and he chases Johnny's lips. And Johnny feels a pang in his chest that none of the girls he'd ever been with did shit like that. He frowns up at Johnny, pushing up on his elbows. What? Just when I said quarterback, I meant like catcher. Fuck, he is an idiot. What? Like, you know, the catcher calls the game like a quarterback, but the quarterback gets all the credit. Just, actually, maybe you're the quarterback, Jimmy was saying, but I think he got it backwards. Johnny. LaRusso sits up all the way, sighing all exasperated. God damn it, there goes the night. What are you saying? I'm just... Fuck, I don't know. LaRusso just looks at him, a little annoyed maybe, but mostly like he was trying to figure out what the hell was wrong with Johnny. Concerned might be the word his mother would have used. I'm just concerned, Johnny. I wish you'd tell me what's going on in that head of yours. He feels LaRusso's fingers pull his jaw around. Hadn't even realized he'd stopped looking him in the eye. Shannon wouldn't have liked Johnny's silence, his reluctance to answer, his failure to verbalize the strange tightening in his chest, slow and creeping. You all right? Yeah, I'm fine. Daniel kisses him for another minute, and they decide without talking about it to call it quits for the night. Roll over, and Daniel hits the lamp and keeps his forehead pressed against Johnny's shoulder because he's the type of nice to know Johnny likes a little physical contact, even if neither of them can really get a good night's sleep curled around each other. Johnny always ended up on his stomach or flipping onto his back. He knows that Daniel let him off the hook, didn't push him to articulate the astringent curling thing in his chest. He can't shake it, this feeling. Like there's something right in front of his face, and he's missing it. Something important. The thing is, LaRusso may not have been the only guy he'd thought about that way. He'd never say it out loud, but way back in high school, he might have had a thing for somebody else. Another guy. Just this little thing, not a big deal, really. Okay, so it was a thing for Bobby Brown. But come on, who didn't have a thing for Bobby Brown? He had eyes like fog off San Francisco Bay, and his face was basically a bunch of soft-edged angles. Sweet cheeks and tanned skin in the summer dusted pink in the Los Angeles heat. He had a full mouth and lips like a girl. And he was, well, pretty. Was the only way to describe Bobby Brown at age 17. Anyway, it's not like he'd ever done anything about it, or said anything about it. Bobby had always been the type of best friend that Johnny hadn't ever had to explain himself to. Not today, not about LaRusso, and not 30 years ago about his stepdad or Crease, or even his mom dying. Bobby had this thing he did with his eyes. Johnny would show up to the Browns after going a few rounds with Sid, and Bobby would swing open the door, and Johnny would pretend like he wasn't crying, like he was just there to look at Bobby's dad's massive fish tank or smoke weed and drink beer. And Bobby would return the favor by tilting his head a little and letting his eyes go wide and soft and understanding. And he'd open the door and slap Johnny on the back and say, "Upstairs, man, go put a movie in. I'll grab the beer." And they'd watch Bruce Lee all night with their knees pressed together and talk about anything and everything except Johnny's feelings. So anyway, maybe it looked a little gay from the outside, but they'd never done anything. Bobby at some point probably figured it out, but the closest thing to actual gay stuff was maybe the long hugs or the sleepovers. Maybe the couple of times Johnny woke up drooling on Bobby's chest. Bobby calmly reading with a textbook tilted up against his legs like it was no big deal, underlining important sections with a pencil in his right hand, and patting gently at Johnny's arm with his left. So maybe Bobby knew Johnny was just a tiny bit gay. But the thing was that Bobby wasn't at all. Johnny knew that. And Bobby knew that Johnny knew. And the coolest, most badass thing about Bobby was that Bobby had never been weird about it, or made Johnny feel like he had to be careful. Bobby let him sleep over in his bed, and he would walk around the room with his shirt off, and they talked about girls and karate and cars. And it was always just fucking primo with Bobby. Bobby was his best friend. They were solid. They'd been that way since high school, and Johnny knows they'll be like that until they die. So one day, after all this stuff about tops and bottoms and toppy bottoms, and seriously, what the fuck? He asks Bobby what he's wanted to ask him for a very long time. Did you think I liked dudes back in high school? Bobby looks up. They're hanging out in Bobby's garage in Bakersfield, Bobby wiping grease from his fingers. He's changing the oil on his bike. The spent filter is sitting on the tool bench behind him. He wipes his fingers, shaking his head a little at Johnny and smiling, like he's trying to frame the words just right. What? Johnny takes a defensive swig of beer. No, it's just... Bobby shakes his head. I don't know. I didn't really think about it. I just always hoped you'd find somebody who could put up with all your shit. So you didn't really think about... He trails off. What? I don't know. He shrugs, ducking his head. We hung out a lot. I just thought maybe you guessed. Allie used to kind of get weird about it. How much we hung out. Johnny. Bobby shakes his head. You didn't come to my house to get fucked. You were looking for shelter. See? Bobby Brown. He's fucking magnificent, isn't he? Johnny tries not to smile. He's just so glad he had a best friend, that Bobby never got tired of him. You could have acted more surprised. Johnny finishes his beer and launches a can across the garage to the recycle bin. Well, Bobby grins, leaning back against the workbench with the new filter in his fingers, flipping open the thin cardboard box. He squints his eyes against the late afternoon sunlight. Sometimes you can tell. Tell what? Johnny shuffles over to the mini fridge, his scuffed-up van sliding along the smooth concrete floor. He knows Bobby and his dad poured it 10 years back. Rob Brown was too old for that now. Bobby was struggling with whether to put him in a home. Not very Christian, he'd said over breakfast at Denny's, wiping his hands across his forehead, mournful blue eyes looking out to the parking lot. I don't know, you guys just seem to fit. You're calmer these days. You fit better in your skin. You mean I'm not wasted all the time? Johnny cracks the can open, wiping the condensation from his palm down his jeans. That's part of it. Bobby turns the new filter over in his hands, frowning thoughtfully. What's the other part? Oh, I don't know, Johnny. You smile more, I guess. Bobby steps toward the bike, peering down at the slowing drip of old oil in the aluminum pan. Johnny peers with him. Maybe that's the karate, or Robbie. Yeah, but isn't that all him, too? Bobby stands and turns back to the bench, twists open the new bottle of oil. He dips his finger in to wipe a thin coat over the rubber O-ring seal for the new filter. Bobby's always been insightful like that. The kids in youth group were probably gaga over him. What'd you do that for? Johnny nods down at Bobby's oily fingers, grabbing for a blue shop towel. Oh, helps the new filter seal up better. Bobby nods and winks and turns back to his tools with newly dry fingers. Bet LaRusso could tell you all about that. Johnny's honestly not sure if this really was a gay joke or just acknowledgement of LaRusso's marginally superior car knowledge. Either way, he has enough to think about without some kind of ridiculous lube job joke making the situation more comical than it already was. Johnny actually hasn't been high in years. He'd spent most of his 20s high, and smoking weed together had been a big part of his relationship with Shannon. Sitting on his couch for hours in between sex, watching stupid movies and letting days slip by when he should have been out working his landscaping gig with Bobby's dad, or looking for a better job, or, God forbid, go to college and make something out of himself. He never managed to go for the degree, but one habit he'd pretty much kicked, outside of a celebratory toke when Jimmy's kids were born, was the old wake and bake. He didn't need any more trouble after the whole Applebee's thing, and there was nothing more pathetic than being high all day with your girlfriend, except maybe being high all day by yourself. So weed went by the wayside after Shannon. Okay, so he'd kept the beer and the booze, but you already knew that, and how else was he supposed to get over his mother's death coupled with prospective fatherhood? Anyway, excuses, excuses. But this whole ass-fucking thing. Who is this really about? Funny it's not Daniel pushing for it. And you're not even sure you want it. You're terrified, aren't you? It'll hurt real bad. It'll make you a little bitch boy. A pussy. A cream puff. But if you don't, then you don't take your own advice. You want to be all in? What's more all in a relationship than getting fucked? If you don't do it, then this whole thing is doomed to go to hell just like every other relationship in your life. You haven't done enough. Tried enough. Try harder. Everybody leaves. He won't. Well, it's not him that's the problem, is it? You won't. Look at you. You want it? You don't want it? Make up your mind. LaRusso doesn't give a shit. He's happy the way things are. He just wants you, you stupid fuck. Why do you always do this? Creating problems where there aren't any. Why do you always do this? Why are you like this? Okay, Jesus. So back to the weed. So he used to smoke and now he doesn't. He doesn't want to bother going to a doctor and making up some excuse. And he doesn't have the number to his old guy anymore. He decides to ask Miguel. He's a teenager. He'll know where to get some. You know they legalized that like 3 years ago, right? You can just go to a dispensary. It's legal if you're over 21. They're at the house out back, seated on the raised deck. The koi pond glitters in the afternoon sunlight. LaRusso was still at work. It wasn't a regular practice day, but sometimes Diaz would just show up. Probably because he knew Johnny was bored on his days off. Yeah, duh, I know. Johnny pulls a face. Miguel can probably see right through his bullshit. I mean, where do you get the good stuff? I don't smoke. Miguel shakes his head, pulling a towel out of his duffel bag to wipe the sweat from his face and arms. Yeah, but those other little shits used to. Tori and what's-his-face. Yeah, but they just had Mitch's older brother buy it. From a dispensary. Legally. Okay, fine. Which one? Just tell me where to go. I don't know where Mitch's brother went, but my yaya goes to a place right off of Reseda Boulevard. Rosa. Yeah, she's got the good stuff. Why do you want this stuff anyway? I didn't know you smoked. I've been cutting back on the beer. Gotta find a new way to chill out, right? Yeah, I guess. Miguel wrinkles his nose up skeptically. Make sure to ask them, though, how much to smoke or eat if you get edibles. That stuff is supposed to be really strong. You don't want to take too much. Johnny chuckles. Kid. I was smoking my fair share in middle school. I can handle a little weed. It's July of 2001, and his mother is wasting away at the cancer center in Northridge. He's going to be a father, and Shannon calls him a coward. She's not wrong. She cornered him in the bathroom of the bar, her hair pulled back in a messy ponytail. He was slumped against a urinal, the gray tile spinning under his feet. "You need to pull it together, Johnny, Jesus Christ!" She had a doctor's appointment the next day, one of those sonogram appointments with the gel and the grainy pictures. He'd never seen a baby in one, only the metastatic mass in his mother's abdomen. "If you want to see your kid, answer your phone tomorrow. I'll pick you up. All you have to do is answer the phone, Johnny." She calls the next day about noon, but Johnny's still working off the hangover. His eyes crack open, and he watches the phone flash on the hook across the room, listens to the shrill ring in the hollowed-out apartment. His fingers close tight around cotton sheets. He doesn't get up, and Shannon doesn't ask him again. Johnny can't handle this weed. He'd asked the dispensary dude for something to relax, and the guy told him that edibles were the way to go, babbling on about THC and cannabinoids or some shit. There was a group of college kids looking at him all weird, so he grabbed a bag of cookies, threw them on the counter, and asked, "Will these get me high?" The answer is yes, very much so. And Johnny now wishes he'd listened to the directions the kid was shouting as he pushed out the door. Or maybe read the little packet of directions he'd immediately thrown away without reading. But he wasn't stupid. He'd eaten one cookie, waited half an hour, and eaten a couple more after nothing happened. And still nothing for another 30 minutes. LaRussa was coming home soon, and he had to be high enough for this plan to work. Finally, almost 2 hours after he'd eaten the damn things, a familiar warm bucket of bliss starts to tingle its way down from the crown of Johnny's head. His eyes feel too hot, and his fingers feel funny, and he decides that watching some porn on his laptop while he waits would be a good idea. LaRussa steps through the door either 5 minutes or 5 hours later. Johnny's not quite sure. The laptop is long ago abandoned. Johnny is too busy completely melting into the couch, head swimming around and around in horrible, paralyzing circles, thinking about how the world was so much emptier than the one he'd grown up in, all the people he's failed in life. What was the point of a 50-year-old man doing karate in his backyard? He's ruined Miguel's life, and Robbie's life, and LaRussa's life, and also, were sea turtles extinct already? LaRussa's face floats into watery vision. He thinks he's being shaken. "Johnny, Johnny, what the fuck is wrong with you? Are you okay?" I can't remember about the sea turtles." "What? Johnny, what did you take?" He feels Daniel's warm fingers on his face. "Cookies. Your fingers are warm." He hears LaRussa sigh. "Have you eaten today?" "I think I'm dying. Did you bring pizza?" "I'm gonna make you some dinner, okay? Does that sound okay?" Daniel pets his head. He hears soft laughter. "Are you laughing at me?" "Yes, Johnny, but you're gonna be fine." LaRussa starts to get up, but Johnny grabs at his wrist. "Hey!" LaRussa comes back, goes back to combing through Johnny's hair, which is nice. "Don't leave. Everybody leaves." "You're gonna be fine," he murmurs. "You just need to eat, and then you can tell me why you do such a stupid thing." "I'm a fuck-up." "Johnny, you're not a fuck-up." "I am, and I'm ruining it." In his embarrassment, Johnny might have started to cry a little bit. "I don't want to be a fuck-up anymore." Daniel wipes his thumbs over Johnny's cheeks. He says some things like baby and maybe even honey, but Johnny won't say anything about that later. "That was none of your business. You can fuck off. Thanks." Daniel must know the pizza can wait, and he pushes Johnny further into the couch and curls up on his side, face to face, and lays there with him for who knows how long, waiting for Johnny to come back down to earth. Johnny wakes up with Daniel's arm around his waist, and his nose tucked into the hollow part where his neck and chest meet. His head is still buzzing, but his thoughts are much clearer, and Johnny breathes deep enough to wake Daniel up. "Why do you have your shoes on?" Johnny asks, peering down into brown eyes. The room is dusk dark. Daniel blinks slowly, confused. "I didn't take them off." "Oh, do you feel better?" "He feels great now, like somebody took all the blood out of his body and replaced it with warm maple syrup." "Yeah," he answers, and reaches down slow and sure, flicks Daniel's belt open. "Take off your shoes." May 2010, North Hills Community Park. Robbie's on the blue team, he's pretty sure. Shannon's on the sidelines, bent over one of a dozen coolers. She's wearing a fake leather jacket, even though it's 70 degrees out. The kids are chasing the ball around the field like flocking geese, a mass of blue t-shirts and black and white shin guards. She turns around, sunglasses hiding her eyes, and Johnny sees her face fall. She slams the cooler shut and stalks over before he makes it to the field. "The hell are you doing here?" "Come on, Shan, I just wanted to see him practice." "Yeah? It's the last one. Why didn't you come earlier? He's been expecting you for months." "I do have a job, you know." Johnny's head is aching from the hangover, and Shannon's voice isn't helping. He cranes over her shoulder and spots Robbie out on the field. "It's one practice a week, Johnny, and there was a game every weekend. You don't work that fucking hard." "Well, fuck you. Like you've ever held down a job for more than a week. Who's buying groceries this week?" Johnny spots a guy in glasses and a button-down shirt rubbernecking from across the field. He looks away quickly when Johnny jerks his chin. "Uh-huh. Let me guess. Dorky Dave over there?" Shannon clenches her fists, and the way her jaw goes tight tells Johnny he's guessed right. "Software? Accountant? How long till he figures out his meal ticket's only good for another month?" Shannon gets right up in his face, and Johnny has a distant thought that maybe this isn't the best way to ingratiate himself to the mother of his son, whom he would like to see today. "Fuck you, Johnny," she hisses. "You need to get out of here. I don't want him seeing you. You'll get his hopes up." "What's wrong with that?" She laughs, that condescending, bitchy laugh that Johnny's always hated. It gets right down to his last nerve. "What, you gonna show up this Saturday? See his last game?" "Yeah, maybe I was planning on it." "You're great at planning, Johnny, but it's the coming through part that's sort of the whole fucking key, you know." "Dad!" Johnny ignores the poison in Shannon's voice and steps past her to see Robbie running up. The rest of the kids are headed to the juice pouches and fruit snacks coming out of the coolers. Johnny feels light slam into his chest and kneels down in time to pull Robbie into his arms. He hasn't seen him in a couple months. "Hey, buddy, you look taller." Robbie pulls back, practically bouncing up and down. "I did, an inch this month. Dad, did you see my assist? I passed to Sam and he got the last goal. I was going to go for it by myself, but coach says I need to give the other kids a chance." "I did see it, buddy. It was awesome." Johnny ignores Shannon's derisive snort, which stung a little. So he hadn't seen the assist. He was here, wasn't he? Dad, are you coming to the game this Saturday? We're playing the purple team. They're really good, but coach says he thinks we can win. And if we do, that means we're the champions." Johnny ruffles his hair and studies his son's crooked teeth and bright eyes behind his glasses. He tells Robbie he's going to be there. He promises. He lies. A week later on a Monday night, Shannon knocks on his apartment door, and Johnny reluctantly cracks the door open. She shoves a large paper envelope in his chest. "I called you," she seethes. "3 fucking times to come to that game. You promised him, Johnny. You fucking promised him, and you broke his heart." "I know," he chokes out. I know, I just couldn't face his own kid. Woke up smelling like sex and booze in somebody else's apartment. Can't remember her name for the life of him now. Had to call a taxi and read the address off an electric bill sitting on the kitchen counter. Shannon doesn't let him finish or pick any excuse from the jumbled mess in his head. You know what, Johnny? You can keep these. They're his team pictures. You can keep one of those on your fridge and look at it every morning because you're not going to get any closer. I won't let you treat him like this. You try and show up like that again, I swear to God I'll call a lawyer and make it official, you understand? He grips the paper envelope tighter. His voice is hoarse and desperate, and he's too drunk for this right now. Look, just let me explain. You're a mess, Johnny, and you're full of shit. I don't know what's wrong with you, but you can't keep using your mother as an excuse. Don't. It's been 10 fucking years, Johnny. Your mother is dead, but your son is alive, and you can't prioritize that? What the fuck is wrong with you? It's pathetic. So you don't want me around, but you're fine dragging your boyfriend of the month past his bedroom every night, huh? He knows. It's not the right time. But it's about all he has in his arsenal. And Shannon's weaknesses were obvious and easy. She tells him to fuck off one more time and leaves. Johnny puts the picture on his fridge, and he leaves him alone. Daniel doesn't ask for more words. He just pulls Johnny in, works his mouth open with his tongue, little by little. Johnny didn't used to put much stock in kissing. It used to be like the quarter you put in to play the game, the price for the prize, pay to play. LaRusso lent a new magnetism to making out, something Johnny hasn't felt the pull of since kissing Allie Mills on the Ferris wheel at 15, when pressing your mouth to somebody else's was bright and brash and brand new, and you wanted to keep going just for the sake of it, just for another taste of somebody's lips, no more room in your head for anything else because you didn't know any better. Well, it was sort of like that. There was a whole lot more to know at 50. Daniel kisses him slow in the strange creeping stills. And when Daniel squeezes in with his thighs and turns the both of them over and holds himself over Johnny carefully, the pressure slows down and reverses a little, opening in a soft, numb wash. Daniel tugs at Johnny's shirt. And Johnny lifts his arms and sits up, just a little, Daniel's weight settling down in the center of his lap. And he thinks he might die with the pleasure of it, the feel of lining up, the elastic slide of Johnny's fingers under Daniel's waistband. Hold on. Daniel breathes heavy into Johnny's mouth, fumbles to his feet, and drags Johnny back into the bedroom. There's a hand on Johnny's bare chest, and another in the bedside table. Johnny hears the plastic crack of a lid snapping open. Come on, baby, he says, pulling Daniel on top of him. Come on, come on. I got you. Daniel's teeth on his chin. I know what you need. Stay with me, babe, come on. The memory sits, playing like a projection behind Johnny's closed eyelids. The freezing morning wind over Lake Tahoe, Dutch in the water below him, Tommy's war cry behind him as they jump together into the air, the rush of the blue surface coming to meet him. It might be the pot, it might be the novelty, but he thinks that the closest he's felt to this, to his soul cracking open into something sublimely new, was being 18 years old, with 60 feet of space between him and the water. The closest he's ever been to death, but also the closest to God, if there was such a thing. Holy shit. He hears himself breathe. LaRusso laughs, chest heaving, and rests their foreheads together, familiar, but in total reverse. I know, Daniel hauls air in, then out of his lungs, rushing over Johnny's skin and wicking the sweat cold from his neck. Fuck, I know it. The sheets are cool at his back, and Johnny's heart thumps steadily onward, opening like the water's all-encompassing embrace, whole and larger than himself. The end.